Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Ellen Tadd, who is the author of The Infinite View, a guidebook for life on Earth. This book is a very good example of information that will help guide you through these more difficult times that we're entering. I believe that all of us have the ability to access spiritual guidance, and Ellen has presented this in a very easy to understand and implement viewpoint. I believe she also teaches this as part of her life's journey and has a lot to share with us. Welcome, Ellen. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Susan, and it's lovely to hear such positive feedback.
Well, it's very, very important to have spiritual guidance, and you know as well as I do that it isn't always easy to know which thoughts in your head and which visions that you have, the meaning of such, and also the the specific meaning. And I think your book gives a lot of great information on how to attune and then interpret what we're getting from higher sources.
Yes. I agree with you when you say everyone has the ability to access direct guidance. And in many ways, I think when we're children, it's much easier, and then through our educational process and through growing up, we're taught to perceive certain ways that usually exclude the spiritual dimensions. And so it's really a matter of reconditioning and shifting the way that we focus and the way that we listen.
And the time we need most guidance is usually when we're most emotional. And so I really like the suggestions you had in your book for when you're overwhelmed with emotion, what you can do to center yourself, concentrate, direct your consciousness to a single point or a single whatever to get control back so that you can go ahead and receive information, because it's not always to receive information when you're very angry or very upset or very fearful.
Yes, you're talking about the relationship between the solar plexus chakra and the third eye chakra.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent many years using my natural clairvoyance watching people's energy centers. And I found that people sometimes are predominantly focused in the gut. Other people predominantly use their analytical minds, and others mm-hmm. are focused out of the middle of their forehead, which is the center of the third eye. And I have found through my experience, or at least my conclusion, is that living in the gut is not a good idea. It makes us more vulnerable to becoming mm-hmm. overwhelmed or becoming reactionary. My guides say it this way, that perception informs feeling, and the third eye is the proper center of perception. And so when we strengthen the third eye, we support ourselves from becoming overwhelmed. And like you said, if we do get overwhelmed, it's because the solar plexus of emotion is in turmoil. And strengthening focus and concentration helps to calm that down.
So would you like to talk a little bit about the different centers, the solar plexus being the gut reaction, and then a lot of people work from their hearts, the feeling center.
Yes. So what I've been taught is that the heart chakra is a radiator, not a discriminator. Mm-hmm. And that the heart is very much like the sun. The sun is so bright and radiates, but doesn't discriminate. It shines everywhere.
Right.
And so when people talk about following your heart, my guides actually say that's a mistake. They mm-hmm. say the third eye is the center of discrimination, and the heart right. is the center of love.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to be in love with all of the choices for, you know, your attorneys or your financial advisors, because then you can't discriminate which is best for you.
Yes, and sometimes we love someone very much, but we shouldn't have a relationship with them.
Yeah, that's very true. So the throat center, that's the center of, I guess, spiritual hearing and vocalization. I was born with a very strong spiritual hearing gift, and I had to learn to discriminate between my own thoughts and then that hearing gift. So that was probably where I began my journey, is at the throat.
I've never heard that expressed. Well, I haven't read books on chakras. I've just watched them.
Uh-huh.
But for me, spiritual healing comes through the crown.
Well, yes. I mean, it does when you're... I guess what I'm saying is that when the chakra opened, when my throat chakra opened, that's when I developed clairaudience.
Ah. Well, when I teach people to open up to clairaudience, the center that I always emphasize is the crown chakra. Because
well, that may
the
have
crown
opened
chakra,
as well.
Yes, I think it must have been.
It must
because
have, yeah.
Because the crown is the bridge from the material to the spiritual dimension.
Right.
And if the crown isn't opened, then guidance can't come through. Guidance from the spiritual dimension can't get to us.
Well, that's true. And describe for the listening audience what your guides taught you about centering in the third eye area, and how maybe some examples of how you would do that when you're trying to get guidance in certain situations.
Well, I first learned about the power of focus and concentration in my early 20s when I actually was having a panic attack. I was in the grocery store and I had chest pain and I was afraid, and I heard a voice from a guide say, focus. Focus on and read a label. Mm-hmm. And as I focused, I discovered that it was impossible to be deeply focused and anxious at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the first event. And there were many circumstances where my guide would come to me when I was in some aspect of turmoil and they would say, focus. And when I focused, the emotional turmoil would subside. And then gradually, as I started teaching classes, they were teaching me the power of focus and concentration. And they said the third eye is the center of focus and concentration. And mm-hmm. you can develop it just like a muscle. And they said, you know, athletes talk about it as the zone. And when they're in the zone, they aren't attached to winning or losing, and they perform their best. So I started watching when people were in the third eye and when they weren't, and when people were focused out of the middle of the forehead, literally the aura becomes much, much bigger, mm-hmm. which is a reflection of a positive attitude. So I started working with clients, and I noticed in observing people that most people I worked with were focused in the gut as they mm-hmm. moved through their daily life. And so I created a technique where I put my clients through a comparison of perception from the gut with perception with the third eye, and the difference was remarkable. People who were in the gut who would feel hurt or upset about something in a relationship from the third eye had greater wisdom and compassion. Someone who in the solar plexus was craving things that weren't good for them, from the third eye, the crave started to go away. Mm-hmm. And what I was told is focus and concentration is the only way to activate the third eye. Mm-hmm. So with eyes opened, I started having people stare at points, corner of a picture frame, or the point on the top of a lamp finial. And so it's really powerful, and there's a simplicity to it that's remarkable. Right now I have a student taking my understanding of the chakra system into elementary schools, and it's amazing. We get kids into their third eye through focus activities, and their whole perspective changes.
Yeah, that's great to teach it at that level.
It's really thrilling.
Yeah, it is. You had a interesting revelation when you focused in your third eye and asked where your son should go to school. Would you like to tell that story?
Yes. It was really using a combination of focus and deep listening.
Mm-hmm.
I was taught to listen to the spirit of my children and let the spirit of my children guide me in how to parent them.
Mm-hmm.
So the story is that my daughter was going to a private school and my son was in a public school, and it was time to decide whether he should go to the same private school for middle school or go continue in public school.
Mm-hmm.
And intellectually I thought, of course he should go to the private school. It is smaller classes, it's a beautiful campus, it's the same school his sister's going to. But I wasn't taught to assume, I was taught to listen. So I went into meditation and I connected through deep focus and deep listening with the spirit or the essence of my son, and I asked him, private school or public school?
Mm-hmm.
And I heard very clearly, public school. I couldn't believe it. So I asked a number of times and I always heard the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I sent him off to public school. He didn't mind. That's where his friends were going. And it took actually a couple of years to learn why. I had no idea why that was the better choice for him.
Mm-hmm.
But then a woman came to that school and started a Chinese program. My children are, you know, adults, and this was quite a while ago. And in Massachusetts, I believe it was the first Chinese program in the state. And even though we lived in a valley with a lot of private schools, none of them at that time had a Chinese program. Now I think they all do.
Mm-hmm.
The private school my daughter went to did not have a Chinese program. If my son had gone there, he wouldn't have had the opportunity to study Chinese in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And it was clear it was my son's passion, it was his gift, and it gave him a head start. So when he went off to college and studied Chinese,
mm-hmm.
He was the only one in his class who had already begun to study it in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And it
right.
just gave him this great big boost. Now he lives in Beijing, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, this was his life's purpose and
right.
so important. Well, what I love about attunement and listening to the spirit of someone and using the third eye and deep listening is my son didn't know he was going to be interested in this. I didn't know,
mm-hmm.
but his spirit did.
Right. Yeah, that's really the beauty of this kind of guidance, is that you really don't know. I mean, none of us know. None of us. You liken spirit like a, you know, flying high above where it can see all the twists and turns on our life paths. And it really can help us not waste time, not waste money, not waste emotion, you know, needless emotion, negative emotion, because spirit can make things much easier for us.
Exactly. What you're saying is it's practical as well as profound.
That doesn't mean that you're always going to have an easy time. I mean, we come here to learn certain lessons, and I like the way you describe it in your book. And so you will have challenging relationships. You will have challenging work situations. You will have challenging emotions. That's part of being down here. But if you use your spiritual guidance, you can get through those a lot easier. And would you like to describe your method for, like, if you have an argument with a friend or a coworker, how you go into the third eye to help resolve that? Because I've been doing that for years. I think it works great.
Wonderful. Well, actually, I encourage people to live their life looking through their forehead. So I hope people don't wait to go to their third eye once things are difficult, because I think it creates a better quality of life regardless of circumstance. But let's say, like, for example, I had a circumstance recently where I had a misunderstanding with a friend, and in the midst of that misunderstanding, I felt a little like I was punched in my gut. And that feeling pulled me down and gave me some turmoil and uncertainty. So then, in order to gain clarity, I literally start focusing on the corner of a picture frame and bring myself to my third eye. And then actually I also meditate, and in the process of meditating also focus my attention out of the middle of my forehead. What this does is it brings us to greater objectivity. We're able to put aside our preconceived notions and hurts, reactions, sadness, anger, and see what are the lessons. What am I to learn? And given what is, what am I to do?
And also, if there was a misunderstanding, there's an awful lot of misunderstandings that one party or the other doesn't even recognize. You know, something that's easily cleared up just with communication.
Yes. But what happens when people are living in the solar plexus, because the solar plexus is the center of harmony, when we don't have things go the way we want them to, we react. We can react in hurt or sadness or anger or withdraw to protect ourselves. When we're in the third eye, there's so much more objectivity. There's an ability to see that everyone's learning, everyone has strengths and weaknesses, and what's most important is to navigate our own part well.
Right. Yeah, really with living in that third eye area, you don't waste a lot of energy. I wrote one of the chapters in the book Optimism. It's about 42 different authors writing on optimism, and my whole thing is very similar to your book, actually. It's listing all of the common fears and why they're not very rational, you know, just going through them, and then listing the methods, which you go over in your book, for staying in the present, staying in the third eye, and then basically the whole chapter is on energy management, because that's the best way to manage energy is to not drop down into the solar plexus, not waste emotional energy where it really isn't doing any good, and face your fears. And I love your exercise about facing your fears, because it reminded me a lot of what I wrote in that article.
Great, great. Well, it's nice to have a compatible perspective.
You're right. So describe, I assume this is in your workshops, you have the patients, or I'm sorry, the clients face their fears. What does that look like?
Well, when I do an initial session, I always look at people's past lives, because I want to understand the patterns. And one of the fundamental teachings of my guides is that everyone is a spirit, and every spirit is our enlightened self, and every spirit has an individual emphasis. And then over the spirit is the soul, which contains all of our past life patterns, traumas, talents, and fears. And in the soul is a concept that I call first error, or the original attitude that was not in harmony with our spiritual nature. This is our deepest fear, our deepest confusion. And what I found by tracing people back into their previous incarnations is that whatever this deepest fear is that we have in our soul, and it's not the same for everyone, is our root issue. And it repeats. and shows itself in a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so my guides have pointed out to me that what we most fear and what we most desire is really linked. And so by learning to manifest our deepest desire, we start to antidote our deepest fear.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found is as we start to antidote our deepest fear, the more superficial fears start to resolve as well.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of these deep fears?
Well, it's always interesting in a class for people to discover their deepest fears because we see that there's a variety of them.
Mm-hmm.
One fear may be the deepest fear, the fear of not being loved.
Mm-hmm.
Another may be the fear of not being safe.
Mm-hmm.
Another is the fear of not actualizing one's creative potential. Or the fear of making a mistake because of the fear of the ramifications of that mistake. So they do vary. And
that's very interesting. When you said that, something went off in me. When you said the fear of making a mistake that would have massive ramifications. So that must be my fear.
Well, when I work with people, I look with vision to see, but when people are looking for themselves, I always have them meditate on two fundamental questions, which is,
mm-hmm.
what is your deepest desire?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I think really I start with what is your deepest fear and have people meditate on it. And then what is your deepest desire? And
well, it's just interesting because I've never reacted to anything quite like I reacted to your last statement.
That's interesting.
It really is, because I'm a person who doesn't appear to have a lot of fear. I've had multiple death threats. I've had for 2 years. I had frequency weapon attacks, and I'm only alive today because of a CIA doctor and that the FBI caught the group trying to assassinate me. I mean, very few people have been through what I've been through, and during that whole time, I had virtually no fear at all because I was so guided. But it's very interesting when you said that, because something really jumped when you said that.
I agree. When I look into you, I feel like that is your deepest fear. And
it is.
You see, when I work with people, I see two different patterns. I write about this in my book. One is an inner first error, and
mm-hmm.
the other is an outer first error.
Okay.
So an inner first error may be, you know, the fear of not being lovable.
Mm-hmm.
So that has to do with how someone is not connecting with their own spirit.
Right.
But an outer first error may be more this fear of making a mistake and the ramification of mistake. So then it's mm-hmm. more a reaction to what's transpired. So, you know, my deepest fear is very linked to making a mistake. It's not exactly what it is. But, I mean, mine has to do with the fear of ignorance,
mm-hmm.
whether it's my ignorance or other people's ignorance, because of the ramification of ignorance.
Yeah,
and
they're pretty incredible in history.
Yeah, exactly. And my guides have said ignorance must exist because you must not know before you know.
Right.
And so the idea of embracing ignorance as a necessary part of learning has been part
mm-hmm.
of my learning. But in that process, one of the affirmations I was given was, and I said it thousands of times, it was mistakes are good. They're
mm-hmm.
necessary
right.
for learning and growing. And so I said it thousands and thousands of times. And, you know, this is where power is so interesting. My guides say if you walk and fall, mm-hmm. it's less dangerous than if you drive and crash.
Right.
So power, true. Having power and making a mistake has bigger ramification than not having power and making a mistake.
Right.
And well, so they say often people, I'm sorry, were you saying something?
Well, I was just saying that in, you know, I've reviewed my past lives, obviously, and I've been in positions of great power. And I think that when you've had a lot of past lives where you've had power, you realize that you do wield a lot more influences. And if you make a mistake, a lot more people do suffer. You know, like taking a country to war when you don't need to take a country to war. You know, like making a mistake. Like I personally believe that Trump responded to a false flag operation, that it wasn't really the Syrian government that did that chemical warfare weapon thing. So that's a mistake. And as president of the country, that's not a good thing to do. You know, it's a, at least he warned the Russians first, but, you know, leaders make mistakes because they don't have all the information.
Yes, and this is where my guides say often sensitive people who care don't take power for fear of the responsibility.
Right.
And the ramification of mistakes. But they say if that happens, then we leave the power to those who are insensitive and don't care.
And abuse it, right. That's true.
Well, it's abusing it when it's not aligned with spiritual principles.
Right. Well, in this lifetime, I place great importance on spiritual guidance, as you do. But I also double-check, and I don't know whether you do this, but we run the whole office on spiritual guidance, and everybody around here always runs around muscle-testing each other to make sure that the guidance that we're getting is accurate. So I've been using muscle-testing, applied kinesiology, for a while now, and I use it in surgery. I use it to find things that other people can't find in surgery. So I know it's very accurate because I wouldn't be able to do the surgeries that I do if it wasn't extremely accurate. So that's one thing we do now is double check with applied kinesiology, and it's actually been very, very helpful so that we don't just, you know, misunderstand something that we hear or don't consider all the ramifications of what is, you know, the situation that we're looking at.
My experience is that when someone is a good meditator, then applied kinesiology is very accurate. And that when someone mm-hmm. isn't a good meditator, it's hit and miss.
That's probably true. I would agree with that. But in my office, we have so many really high spiritual people that muscle testing is a great way to just instantly or, you know, pretty quickly confirm the guidance that you're getting, especially in situations like surgery where you really can't just go back into meditation every time you have a question. You know, you got to...
Where I use muscle testing. I use it when it deals with the body in particular.
Uh-huh. It's very good for that.
It's very good for physical concerns.
Mm-hmm.
I write about in my book the difference between what I call the bing and the thud.
Right, yeah.
And to me, the bing is accuracy and the thud is inaccuracy.
Mm-hmm.
And so the process of really developing deep listening to differentiate between what resonates and what doesn't, and that life gives us feedback so we can hone that skill.
And the other thing that we do need to remember is that because everybody here has free will, sometimes guidance is spirit's best guess as to what the situation will be in the future if it deals with something in the future, as you know. I mean, there's certain facts that occur, like your child's school, public school is going to have Chinese. That's probably known. But there are things that are more up in the air, you know, whether or not certain choices will be made aren't set in stone. So some of the guidance we get, we have to, well, sometimes we just have to ask again, or we have to check on things to make sure things haven't changed.
Absolutely. You have to ask again. That's a wonderful thing to emphasize. I have a chapter on the relationship between destiny and choice. Mm-hmm. And I always find that for myself, it's the most interesting question. What is destined and what is choice? And I've found personally that, and what I've been taught, is that there's what my guides call big destiny and little destiny.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Big destiny, they say, is fixed. And free will won't change it.
That's right.
Like a
That's
huge current in a river mm-hmm. that you just can't swim against.
Right.
And then little destiny, they say, is like a river with a current, but if you work really hard, you can go against it.
Right. Might not be worth
then,
it, though.
Yes, it's not a good idea.
Right.
And then there are a lot of places where there's choice. And mm-hmm. and they say that people have varying degrees of destiny and varying degrees of choice in
right.
a given life.
I think that's true. I think some prophecy, like people who have prophetic dreams, or like my surgery partner, he always knows when he's going to be in a car accident before he's in it. And it's not to frighten him. I think it's to get him to be more careful and to, like, wear his seatbelt and, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we're given information about the future, not that it's always set in stone, but because we will be able to maybe maneuver around it.
Yes, yes. And this is where I say attunement is the only rule, because there are many factors, you know, and the idea of making a generalization how things are may not apply to all circumstance, you know.
So, I guess when you're given information about the future in like a dream or a vision or during one of your attunements, it is good to ask whether it's destiny or choice.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And then big destiny or little destiny. You can even go further into analysis of it. Well, I mean, say you get an impression that your friend is going to have a serious illness. I mean, that's just information. But,
yes.
You know, I love the thing in your book that your guide said that illness is due to environment, karma, and is it attitude?
Yes.
I love that because that is so concise. The emotional
yes.
component of disease is very large, but the environmental, I don't know whether you looked at my website, but I'm the world's expert in women with problems with breast implants, and I wrote the book on it called The Naked Truth About Breast Implants, hence the 2 years of assassination attempts. So you don't threaten a $1 billion industry without some kickback. So with that, most of my patients are extremely environmentally toxic.
Yes.
So that's what I deal with. Now, their emotions get into it because they get angry and they get frustrated at the illness and loss of their life. But the main thing is to deal with the toxic aspect of it.
That's right. So each individual illness needs to be looked at. Sometimes it's a combination of all three. Sometimes it's one. Sometimes it's two, you know. But
mm-hmm.
I think it's helpful to think about it as these three options. You know, our attitude we can really discipline and control. Our
right.
environment we have partial influence.
Right. Not
and
total.
The karma is fixed.
Right. And I wanted to mention something about karma. I read a couple of weeks ago, I think it was 2 weeks ago, Michael the Archangel said that karma had been sped up 13 times. So we should expect seeing karmic consequences, good and bad, of course, to be much more speeded up. And
so where did
he also
get that
said that a lot of people were going to be getting sick during this time because of the, you know, the relationship of karma to illness.
Where did that information come from?
It was from a channel that Michael comes through frequently and is very accurate. It's not me. It's one that's on the internet that I subscribe, that I look at over time. It's actually very accurate. So I believe it's Michael. I hear that it's Michael.
Well, one of the things I believe is people are getting more and more ill because our environment is also more and more toxic.
It is.
And also there's a lot of emotional stress. So, you know, there are a lot of challenges, and I like the idea of working all sides against the middle.
Right.
And
well,
so,
Michael said this happened because the timeline split. 2 weeks ago, the timeline split where a certain percentage of the population will stay in the third dimension and a certain percentage will ascend with the planet into the, you know, probably the fourth dimension. So that's the context in which this karma thing occurred.
So in my book, I really emphasize experiential knowing.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, I'm not so focused on esoteric details, mm-hmm. but really experiential knowing. So I don't know about what you're talking about. It hasn't been my experience.
But you can find out because you can go in and listen. I mean, you can find out if it's true. That's what I do.
Can, but it's not the emphasis of what I'm being taught or what my guides are talking about. So, you know, what they have said is, mm-hmm. your world circumstance will worsen, and people will fall to the side of fear, or they will fall to the side of a spiritual perspective.
Right.
And it will be harder and harder to ride the fence.
Yeah, and that's essentially what Michael said, too. Michael said the timelines have split. In other words, it has begun. I mean, all the major religions taught this, that this would come, and I just think it's interesting that it may have actually, the timelines may have actually split. I mean, I don't know if you know a lot about timelines. I know a lot about it because I was in the military and studied Looking Glass and a lot of the information about timelines.
I really don't know much about timelines.
Right. Well, timelines are important because when they converge and when they diverge, then
things get a lot more intense. Would you define timelines? I don't know what you mean.
Sure. A timeline is, well, let's talk about someone who goes from the future who comes back to the present. Okay, so they're on a timeline, and when they come back to the present, they can tell us what happened on their timeline. There was a time traveler called John Titor, T-I-T-O-R. You can read all about him on the internet. He came back from, I think, the year 2025 or 2035, and he was from a future where the U.S. was in a civil war with the government controlling the cities and the militia more in the country, and Russia had done a sneak attack, nuclear attack on the U.S., taking out 30 cities. Washington, D.C. was destroyed. The capital wasn't there. But anyway, he described his whole timeline. But he said, you're not on that timeline because in my world, the Olympics stopped in, like, the year 2000. But obviously, in your timeline, they're still happening. So in my world, things got really bad quickly so that there weren't you couldn't have the Olympics because of the strife among countries. He said, so my timeline's not your timeline, but I came back to warn you about certain things. And you can read all about it. I mean, his advice is actually very good. So that's that you can learn by reading about John Titor about timelines. Now, The other place you look on timelines is Project Looking Glass, which is a military project that involves information brought by extraterrestrials. And it has a lot of information on timelines. But essentially, when things like ascension occur, there'll be a timeline that goes, that stays in the third dimension and probably gets a little worse. You remember all those Mad Max movies? I think that was the collective consciousness into that timeline, although I don't know that it will get that bad. But and then we have a timeline going into ascension where these spiritual technologies will be released, the energy technologies, the medical technologies. And it's interesting because Trump just signed a paper, an executive order, calling for the release of all of these technologies out of the secret space program. So I think we're on a timeline, not that's going to go into nuclear war or other, you know, constant conflict that we've been in, but we're in a timeline that's going to take it out, take us out of that. And the point is, not everybody will go in that timeline. Some, when the timelines diverge, some will go one way and some will go the other. But it explains ascension from more of a, I guess, more of a scientific standpoint. But you have to still understand multiple dimensions.
Well, you know, when I first was taught by beings in the etheric world, they said, do not read about this topic. We want you just to have experiential knowing and speak directly to what you've experienced. And so I've stayed away from reading any of that kind of material because it's really not what my work is about. It's really about teaching people how to have experiential knowing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was guided to, and I was actually put in touch with people specifically to learn about this stuff. So my path's a little bit different. But all I'm saying is I think we truly are on the timeline where this world is going to get a lot better. But one of the things is that karma, one of the components of disease, is now much more active than it was, say, a couple of years ago. So,
well, the toxicity is a major factor.
Oh, absolutely. But I believe these technologies that Trump is calling for include technologies to clean up radiation and chemicals. Because they're already known.
Yeah.
They're already known. So that's very important.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So all I'm saying is there's a lot of reason to have hope that we're on a good timeline, that toxicity will be cleared up, that we'll have a much better life with a lot fewer people on the Earth, because probably only 20% of the population is on the timeline that's headed toward ascension. So it should be an interesting ride.
Well, it is interesting to be alive.
Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Absolutely. My website is ellentadd.com, T-A-D-D, two D's. And my new book is called The Infinite View, and it's available online and in bookstores.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate this opportunity, and I wish you all good things.
Well, thank you. Well, this is Dr. Susan Kalb. Next week, we're going to be interviewing Carolyn Jarvis, Life Before Life, How Soul Agreements Direct Our Destiny. And hopefully we'll talk about the possibility of changing soul agreements if needed. And then on the 22nd, Vishnu Swami on Eternal Dharma. Thank you very much for joining us. Please join us next week.